There's a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live at the Elder Dragon Journal podcast once again. But this week, I'm really a Nixialist, because Nixia is a smart man, and he remembered to notify me just like 2 days ago that he will be unavailable for the whole week, because that's Nixia. And since Nixia is such a huge personality on this podcast, I decided to bring not one, but two replacement people for him for this week. First of all, we have Andro, who was already here for a couple of episodes. Andro, say hi.
Hello, everybody.
And we decided to talk about something that I've been following for a good while, not participating in it, but following. Interesting. We have Siggy from Lab Maniacs. Say hi, Siggy.
Hello.
So, Siggy, who the hell are you?
But in the context of this, I am Siggy from the Lab Maniacs YouTube channel. We focus on competitive EDH, with gameplay, deck tech, setups, and whatever else you think of, really.
It's nice having you on, and you guys been having good weeks?
Yeah, it's kind of been uneventful. The new semester university started. I haven't really had much to do.
I'm super jealous, to be honest, because I had like 2 weeks from hell on works.
Oof.
How about you, Andre?
I'm just back from a wedding, so it was like a wedding by the seaside. Highly recommend, like Whoa. The best 4-day vacation.
Poor man. We have a thing that we like to do on this podcast, basically. We call it Commander of the Week, and you just talk about like some games ahead or something like that, if you did have it. So you guys have any stories?
Yeah. We recently a ranked ladders competitive EDH Discord. I haven't really gotten to only 3 games total, and I've been playing all of those to Ferry, and he's been doing quite well.
This next one?
it's hard to Ferry stacks, because it's more of like a mid-range gold deck that runs a bunch of hate pieces that it can play through well.
Alright, any special plays you did that were fun or...?
I did have an interesting one, not in those games though, but in another one that I played with my IRL play group, which was coincidentally also where I was able to win in a turn, but I had a bunch of ways of going about it. And I ended up a line that was a bit weird. Like, one of my opponents had a Mystic Remora out, and he had a bunch of lands untapped, and my only protection was a Spell Pierce. So, what I did was he also had a Sense Divining Top. So I played a bunch of and made him using his top and Remora to spend mana until my Spell Pierce was online, which I then used to protect my...
what was the win?
I ended up going like, so the winning sequence was Transmute Artifact, Grim Monolith, Chain Veil.
The usual, more or less.
Yeah, just a lot of weird sets to get.
What about you, Andre?
So I just finished building Grenza, the old dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really nice deck, it's a really fun deck. Didn't have a chance to play against any actual humans, but I did get a chance to gold. I kept losing to myself because that is not the easiest deck to play. Apparently, yeah, it's learning Legacy Storm all over. It's really, really fun, but it's kind of embarrassing to play against nobody and still not win.
Wow. So you're in the city right now, or are you still on vacation? Well, then we can
I'm back.
We can set something up like for next week.
Oh, for sure.
You can actually goldfish and lose against real people.
No. By the entire idea is that by then I'll get the the average kill turn on that thing. Like I had it down to about I can get it down to about turn 3 on average with a few odd turn 1s and 2s. But I think like the deck itself is capable of something like a turn 2 average if somebody actually knows what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, games against you always end up being really arch enemy.
Don't I know.
Basically, he plays competitive EDH decks. We play something that's not, 75%, not fully CEDH. So we kind of have to, gang up on him for the first couple of turns and then, try to play actual game of Magic.
Okay. That can't affect table dynamic.
What mostly happens is that I play usually taxing decks, so either put some hate piece that he has to go through, and my girlfriend smashes us with huge dragons and stupid things. That's how it usually goes.
Yep.
I make sure that nobody loses, and then I lose.
Yeah, that's always kind of the downside stacks decks. If you have a deck that isn't really affected by all the like taxing and rule of law stuff, they just play big cards once a turn and don't try to like cheat from the graveyard or anything, then yeah, like you said, smashed by dragons.
Luckily, my girlfriend has been improving her decks quite a lot, so her decks are more efficient now, which means that Trinisphere is actually hitting her harder, and I'm happy with it.
That is, Trinisphere is such a strong card, Jesus.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
So for my comment, finish the thought.
No, it's the real interesting part about it, it's like the real difference between like a casual and a competitive group. Like in a casual setting, Trinisphere does nothing.
Yeah.
Like dead nothing. And as soon as you get to a table that's even a little bit competitive, it's like the best card in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
My commander of the week has something similar to do with Trinisphere. I haven't built the deck yet, but I have an idea to make Derevi's decks, because I need more stacks decks in my lineup.
So oh boy.
I'm looking forward to tapping Trinispheres and Winter Orbs on end steps, because that sounds like fun.
Wait. Yeah, I can see it.
And my friend has like an extra copy of Derevi that I'm just going to snag for real cheap and start brewing.
Back last early winter or something, when most of competitive EDH was going through a phase of Drogo hype with Baral and Rashmi.
Yeah.
People were brewing a lot of other stuff, and one of them was actually Derevi.
Oh my god, what the hell?
That deck was something. It's like, you played a lot of these draw X spells, and then you played a bunch of things that make a lot of mana, and you'd use Derevi step to draw a lot of X spells. It was definitely interesting. Not quite as strong as the other draw variant. It was fun.
Now I'm gonna have to go and fish that out, guys.
I can send you
if you can manage it, sure. But enough of commandering of the week. Let's move on to actual topics. So first of all, I've heard on the internet that you guys are just a bunch of dicks who don't like having fun. Why is that?
No.
Of course it's not. I'm just joking.
I thought. Yeah. No. We very much. What's more fun than not just beating one opponent on time, but beating three opponents at the same time? And I mean, that's not all. Obviously, competitive EDH, if you really think about it, follows the same type of spirit of that every other type of commander does as well. Because at the heart of it, it's a social experience. You need to communicate clearly who you play with and fun together. Competitive EDH aims to find like the best decks we can make in this, and we want to play those decks against other strong decks. That's where the communication element comes in. Like, one thing that's often brought up as an argument against EDH is that it's not particularly fun to have one person at a table play a competitive deck and just basically pub stomp everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely agree. It's not really fun for either side. Like, there's nothing interesting about playing a turn 3 win deck, decks that is casting like cultivates. And there's nothing interesting about on turn 3 after you've cast your cultivate when you've been setting up for like a nice long to 3 hour game.
Yeah, what I like when decks get a bit more competitive in EDH, not even full CDHs, games get faster. And I just like it because I can get more games in one night.
Yeah, that's also pretty true.
My girlfriend had the best observation. She we played with our local playgroup a couple of games, and she was like, wow, this was a long game. How long was this? Hour and a half? No, it was 45 minutes. We considered that now a super long game.
But it's like, it's a really similar to like the way Legacy and Vintage also tend to play out. Like, you hear the stories about like games lasting 3 turns. Like, it seems like it's so fast and nothing happens. And then you actually watch a game, and it's like, it's so much more play condensed in a few turns, because there's something interesting happening. It's not just ramp, go, everybody's ramping, everybody's trying to get their little stuff out, their engines going, and then somebody plays a Wrath of God, then somebody plays like some other sweeper, and then you're all back to, and there's also, like, a little side benefit, like, the one thing I really, really like about competitive, that I think it's a bit superior to casual, is that competitive EDH means everybody knows exactly where everybody else is standing. Like, everybody is doing everything they can to win. Whereas in a casual game, it's really, really difficult to gauge exact power level. It's really easy for somebody to, like, okay, my deck looks fine on paper, and then I come along like with my a decent zombie tribal, and somehow because I put in a few cards that ended up being a bit too good, I'm a pups. Or somebody, like, we all agree, okay, these are the fine cards, and somebody finds like a combo within their deck, like a 3 or 4 card combo, and now they win, and now they're too. It's really hard to find a balance if everybody's agreeing, okay, we're something other than full power.
And one more thing comes up often. My deck is 75%. What does that mean? That's the thing. Everybody has different definitions.
the first thing, Andros, I completely agree. Like, one of the initial things that turned me towards EDH was that I would spend an hour driving to the store that's, like, in the city I study in to play some EDH. And the decks were so horribly mismatched that I wasn't really having a good time. And the easiest way to deal with that was build the best decks possible and play them against the other best decks. What did you say as the second thing again?
75%.
Yeah. Oh, 70. This kind of a... I, like, 75... I do have to... I haven't read all of the content on it out there, so I don't know the concept too well.
Basically, Jason Ault, who's the guy who's behind the concept, is like, you can battle against casual decks fine, and you can sometimes snag a win against more competitive decks. But that is such a gray line that it's really difficult to actually to pinpoint. What makes one deck 75%, what makes other deck, like, say, 85%?
That is a really hard thing to like pin down, as you said. The way we're doing it on our Play EDH Discord server is by having like 4 different rough where decks can fall, with casual, mid power, high power, and competitive.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, people are often unsure where exactly their decks fall, despite like our best attempt to define different power levels.
Yeah, in the end, I think it has to come down to the playgroup you're having, and you all decide what power level you.
Yeah, one reasonable suggestion I saw on Reddit recently was that you have you don't rate your decks yourself, or you don't build like towards an intended power level, but you build the deck the way you want,
mm-hmm.
and then you have other people give that deck a certain score from, I don't know, say 1 to 10, and if your playgroup is big enough, like you talk about with the other people enough, you can probably find the rough power level of your deck compared to what other people are playing, and that's really what matters. Like, how do the decks that you play feel to the people you're playing with?
Mm-hmm. I'm lucky that I managed to form a playgroup in my neighborhood, and we have approximately came to the same power levels, partly because some of us have bigger collections, partly because some people proxied some cards, and that's good. Now we can finally actually, you know, play and have reasonably equal games.
Yeah, proxies really help with that. I feel like that's one thing players tend to overlook. You don't... Having proxies doesn't automatically mean that you're, like, gonna start sort of arms with the top or anything. You can also use proxies to level the playing field. Like, if one person is too strong, but they don't own cards to build different decks, which can actually happen. That's kind of the case with me right now. Like, I've got my CDH cards, but nothing else. And there you can make a deck on the same power level. Or if people want to win power or need like specific cards that interact with a stronger deck, then proxy it's cool.
Yeah, but I mostly proxy, honestly, I didn't even go for cards. I don't know, I just want to proxy all the cards I already have. I don't want to spend any more money. Because Trinity Spheres have begun to climb up in price, and I just don't want to pay for that or for any other card that I already have.
Yeah, or proxies.
But like, but the guy we have in our playgroup, he proxied like a couple of dual lands and things like that. And we're completely fine with that, because he's like, I don't want to spend money on this, but I want to, you know, have better mana base. Sure, do it. Mm-hmm. We don't care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I tend to... You want to fight the other players, their wallets.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, who has money for a time twister?
You?
I was actually, like, in terms of, like, I'm a guy who, like, actually really likes having original cards, but even, like, even for me, it's, looking at Time Twister, like, I actually looked, oh, there's a gold border of Time Twister, like, an official Wizards proxy thing. You would think that a proxy card that is not legal anywhere, like, in any official tournament, would at least reasonably priced, and it's a 250 euro gold border official business proxy.
It's super. And whenever somebody brings up buying gold, especially like Time Twister, just tell them, no, please put your money somewhere else. I don't know, invest in Bitcoin if you want to, but don't buy gold border cards.
Hey, I got myself an Ancient Tomb, which was cheap, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if they're like Grim Monoliths are fine. That's like a 30 cent card if you buy it in gold border. That's okay, but spending a proxy Time Twister.
Yeah, I got to that that Ancient Tomb really cheap, so I was like, okay, I'll play with this, but I'm not gonna spend that much money on a proxy, which is just nice proxy.
The official Wizard, like the official Wizard, like what were they, World Tournament cards or International Edition cards? They're really nice. Like they really, like, if you want to proxy something and it exists and it's like for a really cheap price, that's a good, especially if you're like not big into proxying stuff yourself. But it's absurd. It's absurd to the levels like a Gaia's Crane. I think it's something like 25 euros for a gold bordered card, like for a card that's not legacy playable, that's not vintage playable, that's not technically speaking even EDH playable. If you're playing like in something official or sanctioned,
it just doesn't make sense really. And I mean, if you're playing then use normal proxies. Like, look at the vintage community; they encourage proxies there. They have big unsanctioned tournaments where you can run like 50 proxy vintage, and that's good.
Oh, they have even full proxies, because vintage players just want to play vintage, and you know, you can't expect people to actually show up with real cards.
Yeah, and don't think there's anything wrong with doing the same in EDH.
No, I was always up for proxies. Just, I'm not the person who's gonna proxy that much, but if people want to do it, sure, why the hell not? But again, I'm a person who likes people playing all kinds of strategies. I'm not the person who hates, I don't know, control decks or this deck or that. Just play whatever the hell you want.
I think that's also part of being competitive. Like, sure, you can have some distaste for certain types of decks, but if you really want to play competitively, then you need to set that aside. Like, focus on how you can win. And practice against those types of decks as well.
I think it more comes down to me playing taxing decks, and I'm just like, you play whatever you want, I'm just gonna shut it down. I don't care. That's more my approach.
Just try.
That's the thing. I try to do it, and sometimes I fail. Sometimes I just manage to, you know, put everybody under the vice, and that's it.
Oh, yeah.
There's been many times when I have killed people with stupid saplings, because Elish Northern saplings are kind of good. And when nobody has lands, you know.
Like, that's how Blood Pod went.
I actually made the Blood Pod for myself. Not the real CDH version, but, you know, my take on it with cards I have. And it's actually working, and I'm really liking the decks a lot. Play similar to my Alesha, that in Texas, but that splash of green enables so much more.
Yeah, that's kind of the reason why in competitive EDH as well, the, like, Queen Machest and Alesha Who Smiles at Death stacks fell off them.
I know.
Because suddenly you just have green. You just have Timna in the command zone, which is incredible. Timna is such a good card.
Mm-hmm. If I could have her as a partner for Alesha, I would be so happy. No, but just adding Mana Dorks into taxing deck is life changing.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Now when you blow up everything and don't have any Mana Rocks, you're still good. And those the Mana Dorks are drawing your cards because your commander is stupidly good.
Yep.
I have managed to win so many games just on the account of my dorks hitting people. And I draw all the cards, and then I'm, you know, settled.
Yeah, it happens. Like, I, back when Blood Pot, like, the Flavor of the Month deck, it's not the Flavor of the Month, it's a really strong deck still, but, like, when everyone... I put Silent Arbiter Teferi just so they couldn't draw more than one card after their turn.
What I like about the Bloodbath as well is that its commanders put perfectly into win conditions.
That's so ridiculous.
I played that deck and I was like, why is this happening? What the hell?
Yeah.
I even managed to get to Kikijiki. People kill my Kikijiki and I still managed to pod Tana into Karmogoyf to get Kikijiki back and combo again. Just, how resilient is this deck? I'm not even playing the CDH version, that's the thing.
Yeah, but we're good. And that's kind of what stacks fully competitive EDH is. Mm-hmm. You don't just need like a pile of hate you can drop and nobody does anything. You also need some way to end the game quickly.
Yeah.
Because if somebody finds a window somewhere, like the time it would take you to beat people down, there's not much. But thanks to having, you can just set up Trinis, another rule of law or something, and then you don't get birthing, but like Trinisphere, rule of law, and some other hate piece, and that's enough to then just drop birthing pod and win the game.
Mm-hmm. How big were the partners for CDH?
Huge. Probably the biggest chain maybe ever.
Basically just three of the commanders, right?
Let's see. So it's Thrasios and Tymna are the obvious big ones. And after that, people have been playing around with a lot. Like Tana has been a great partner for Tymna. We've seen some people try out Sylas.
Wow.
But that's kind of, in my opinion, was like for a Thrasios Scepter build that went just bargain of bug plus white. What else we're trying? Ishai.
Oh, the bird guy, right? The bird guy.
Yeah, surprisingly good.
I mean, when people are casting a bunch of spells during each turn, she could get there.
Yeah. What else? Oh yeah, Vile's pretty much only for colors.
Hey, it's actually surprisingly, like, even if the commander itself isn't good, the simple fact that you can just, like, adding an extra color, giving yourself the exact color combination you want or need, is, like, it's something, like, we didn't have before. They were, like, you had a three-color deck or you had a five-color deck, and nothing in between.
Yep, yeah. And giving, like, a more diverse color availability, strategies that weren't quite as before, like Infinite Mana Combo, has brought the strategy to the forefront of the format.
I'm just impressed how big of an impact I had, and Wizards didn't even have an idea of this.
It did take a while. Like, mm-hmm. I remember when partners and everyone was like, okay, this guy, Infinite Mana Outlet, I guess, and the other card maybe might be good as a draw engine for Hate Bear decks. And then it took us, I think, like a solid 2 months or so before people actually realized that Tymna is
stupid.
Kind of insane and creature based.
There's a drawing cards in decks that shouldn't draw that many cards. It's kind of good.
Yeah. Oh, one I forgot to mention that's been on the rise lately is Chrom.
Oh my god. The big guy?
Yeah. He is surprisingly good.
In what kind of decks?
So I've mostly Tymna and Chrom together in like a more mid-rangey non.
Mm-hmm.
You run like a bunch of hate cards, you still run Ad Nauseam, you run counter spells, and then you have win condition, depending on what you go for.
Alright then, what's next thing we want to talk about?
We have
basically things you guys like about Dominaria, right?
Oh right, yes, yeah, let's do that, fun topic.
So first of all, how do you feel about the whole set?
It is just amazing. It's so cool references mm-hmm. to Magic's history.
How long have you been playing, actually, the game?
I start, I think around, like, 4th grade, which was during, I think, the first Mirrodin block, 2003.
Oh, me too. I also started in that year, so you're an oldie.
Nice. Yeah, I've been with Magic on and off for a very long time.
I've just had an on phase and that's it. I never had an off phase.
That's also good.
I'm kind of entrenched in this game right now, so...
Understandable.
Mm-hmm. So, you like the throwbacks, the cards look fun, but CDH-wise, is there actually a number of cards that you guys think are going to make a splash?
Yes, indeed. I mean, let's just get the room out of the way. Yargle is obviously going to be tier 0.
He's gonna be banned. That's it.
Yeah, that thing's not surviving because that thing's going the way of memory jar. It's like just too good, way too.
9/3 for 5 mana. I mean, guys,
literally a power 9.
Also, it's good for your Frog Spirit Tribal, so you know.
Yeah. Okay. Now let's take a look at some card stats.
Let's good. Let's good.
Maybe
cards.
Are not good. That might see some. So the big one to talk about is...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a new Mox.
I heard Moxen are good.
Then you probably heard right. This one, however, comes a few interesting drawbacks, because you need to have Thing on to work, which means that it's not going to be amazing in decks that don't run out their commander really.
So what could the what deck could use this?
Probably Baral, maybe JV, and I could see it for some Thrasios. Like, there's a Thrasios Vilesmith sort of control build that I've been working on. Probably use Mox Ember.
Right. I mean, Mox was kind of obvious anywhere where it can be.
Yeah.
It is kind of disappointing. Like, its drawback, like, it's the first card that, like, the moment I saw it, it has Mox. It has to be fantastic. Like, it's a Mox. But generally, because if you want to play your commander early, you do not want to have it. It can help. Like, it can help you play. If you're playing Yisan, you want to play Yisan on turn two, which would be fantastic. Except you want cards that let you play Yisan on turn two, which the Mox doesn't. And if you want to play your commander late or don't want to play it at all, it's like it's basically like if you draw it on turn 7 or 8, it's basically like a land with a potential bounce is not that great. Like it's fantastic for like it's fantastic for most EDH formats, but like it might actually be the Mox that doesn't see play, which would be really strange.
On the fun side, this makes Tibalt more playable. So, you know, what's next that you guys had in line?
So we found Mox Ember. There's another artifact is worth talking about, and that's Damping.
Oh, yes.
What's...
It doesn't shut off as many things as I would like, but I'm still going to play it in my taxing decks. Guess what? Making all the spells cost more is really good. That control player who had good counter spells now has really bad counter spells.
I actually think like the fact that it's not like it's not universal, and that can actually be a good thing, because the very big downside to a lot of stacks is that if you're a combo deck, you cannot play a Amethyst, you can't play you can't play the classic stacks pieces in your combo deck because you're screwing over yourself. But if you have a combo deck that's immune to the sphere, you can put it in. Like, I think we see decks that usually do not play stacks play this thing because they don't care, and it still screws over enough of the table, like enough of the other, like, the Stormish, the Storm type decks, enough to be useful.
I'm not sure where Damping now. The, like, slightly weird part about it is that in order to, like, be about as good as a Sphere of Resistance, somebody needs to cast 3 spells, and
yeah,
it only gets better with the spell. As you just mentioned, there's a bunch of that can just play around it, like Flash Hunt, not care about Damping Sphere.
Oh no, poor me.
I mean, a bunch of Ad Nauseam decks probably care. Damping Sphere is really annoying for all the Food Chain decks, obviously.
Oh yeah.
Although...
Prosh. Yeah. Prosh doesn't really care, because like if you make Prosh more expensive, they just get more Cobalt. Or am I... Yeah, no. It's like Prosh simply.
It works.
Prosh doesn't care.
Prosh often.
But Tazri does feel bad. Best one. Classic feel bad. Doomsday, and the Grixis Doomsday variants feel pretty bad about this one. So I'd probably have it as like a meta. If those are decks that you play against a lot, then Damping be quite nice, but if faster decks you play against are more on the end of Flash Hulk, what else? Wing Sphere. Teferi can win a bit of extra work, and I think Doomsday Grow doesn't particularly care about Damping.
Yeah.
It, like, kind of, in the sense, like, yeah, you can probably play, but it's usually really, it's, at least in my playtesting, you're usually not very flush on mana, like, at least the initial part. It can slow you down, which is really bad. The deck is kind of glass cannon.
That's fair.
Is that all we have on Damping Sphere, or
Shutting off Crit is nice.
Oh yeah.
So if you have some kind of deck that plays a bunch of hate pieces and like a Tabernacle, then with because like one of the things I always used to hate a bit about Tabernacle is that the kind of decks that are shut off with Tabernacle are also the decks that tend to play Gaia's Cradle and Crop Ritual.
So they'll pay.
Yeah.
Tap one land, pay Tabernacle.
I think that...
I wanted to... I saw some crazy builds concerning Helm of the Host.
Oh, Godo.
Yep.
I'm really not sure where to put that deck. I think it's probably the best thing Mono Red has to offer now. But is it going to be good enough?
It's not going to be tier 1, I'm sure for that.
Yeah. It's kind of tough because, like, you can take two different paths to the deck. The one would be to just do, like, fast Godo, try to win as soon as possible, which means you're going to have to high amounts of C from red decks, so you're not always going to have access to the amount of mana you're going to have. And the other way to build it would be, like, a stacks deck with a compact win condition.
Mm-hmm.
But in that case, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot because combo is still really expensive mana-wise.
Yeah. I mean, the fun way to go about it is obviously just glass cannon it and see what happens.
That's true.
Honestly, you're playing mono red, might as well go.
I'm inclined to. I mean, people are still...
Of course they are. It's
probably gonna win.
It's nice to have a combo piece in your commands.
As a Teferi, play whole hungry.
Anything else you would like in the brown section of the spoiler?
Just for artifact. Not really. I think those were the ones that are worth mentioning.
So what next do you guys like?
Let's see. So do we want to do like some more general cards first or some specific combo pieces?
You tell me, whatever you want.
Okay, then I'll start what I like. Blue cards. Blink of an Eye, because Into the Royal. Yeah, Into the Royal has existed for ages. This is exactly the same thing. So if you want more of Into the Royal, Wizards has your back.
It's a really good effect.
Yeah. There have definitely been games where Kick the Royal, and it's been useful.
I mean, generally, it's just good effect to have in both CDH and just normal EDH games. Bouncing things is nice, and just drawing cards is nice.
And having the choice, like having the option.
Yep.
Sadly, you can't do the whole boomerang and bounce your land on the second turn, but you know, I really love doing that.
Oh, yeah. Boomerang is something in 1v1, that's for sure.
It's okay when it's one boomerang, but when it's two boomerangs, just like...
Isochron Scepter boomerang.
I'm sad.
With a paradox on the side.
I'm sad you can't Isochron Scepter plow under.
What's that one again?
What's the card that you bounce to lands top of the library?
Oh.
Wish you could do that on Isochron Scepter.
That's wrong.
That would be magic as Richard Garfield intended to be.
Well, if that was the case, he would have printed it in Dominate.
I don't know, he printed Armageddon in Alpha, so you know, that's all I'm saying.
Speaking of Alpha, I recently found out that there's a magic card that's literally...
Really? What does Castle do?
Actually don't know, but I just randomly saw it and wow, yeah.
I do think that, like, Mark Rosewater said, like, one of the biggest issues they have is the card name economy.
Yep.
Because basically used up all, like, the good short names already.
You mean, like, Telekinesis, which is a really crappy blue spell? And now they can't use Telekinesis on anything else. Or Teleportation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or Telepathy.
Yeah. I mean, Telepathy is okay. It's actually a good effect on an okay card.
Yeah, I just have some telepathy because a lot of people are trying to play it in CEDH just for like to make the game.
Isn't it played in Circu? What's the deck? Land Control, yeah.
I take a lot of issue with several card slots in the current Circu.
Uh-huh.
I don't think they need what they put in.
And telepathy is one of them, or?
Yeah. Like, this is kind of a... Like, they expect it to work as a sort of passive stacks piece by slowing down the table because nobody wants to do anything when they can see that others have interaction in their hands. But that is not going to work if, like, you know what you're doing, pretty much.
Yeah, you usually expect that people have interaction in their hands. You're working accordingly with that.
Yeah, and to me at least, a lot of EDH is a game of expectations. Can I expect this person to have a counterspell? Can I expect this person to try to go off next, etc.? And telepathy, if you play with it, means that you get an intuition when that's the case.
You will not, as they say it in Dark Souls, get good.
Exactly.
Fun fact for anybody that's interested, Castle found the card. It's an enchantment for 4, so for 3 and a white. Untapped creatures gain +0/+2, yeah. Attacking lose this bonus. Last reprinted in 7th edition.
Wait, you guys didn't know that? You robot it out for a second. You were looking for that card?
Well, I was looking. Interestingly enough, I did not play, I'm not used to playing like worse copies of Glorious Anthem.
Are you surprised that I know these stupid cards? You also had Castle Raptors in Time Spiral that did the same thing.
Oh.
But they gave the bonus just to themselves, I think.
Hmm, interesting.
I have a really big database of Magic cards in my mind. Sadly, my mind doesn't work for anything else as good, but you know.
I know. I've got like the most EDH relevant cards, but for other things, memorizing stuff really hard.
Because they're not as fun.
Exactly, yeah. That's probably why.
So what's next on the spoiler that you guys like?
Unwind. That's
Oh yeah, our local control player gushed over.
Understandably. I really morale. Because yeah, it's not just free, it's mana positive. I kind of like it for Rushmi.
Mm-hmm, I can see.
Do I like it anywhere else? People have been talking about it for JVP High Tide, but it is a bit awkward there.
Awkward how?
Because, like, you usually want untap effects on cards to do proactive stuff, like Frantic Search, draws you cards, etc. And Unwind is, well, a defensive card, and you don't really want to get the untaps.
So, let's see. Anything else in blue?
Nothing.
Divination or something like that?
I have played Insight, the enchantment you draw whenever somebody plays a green spell.
Oh, that's a metaphor.
As a divination. I don't think I'd play literal divination.
So what's next up on the line?
Red. There's one really good red card in this set for CDH.
Squee?
Exactly.
Squee is good. Sadly, people, Andra's connection got lost, so he says bye to us, guys. So it's just me and Siggy from now on.
Okay, goodbye. He will be missed.
Rip in peace. Anywho, Squee, why is he here?
Because Food Chain is a card, and it has a really good deck.
Guess what? My girlfriend plays Food Chain Prosh, and guess what I'll be seeing soon on.
Oh, does Prosh also
Her version will, because she just likes to... And she's not playing a CDH version, so she has slots.
I think the version actually might as well. Like, they're definitely at least going to consider it. But Squee is really cool because wheel effects get better in your deck, because you can, like, you have a cast from exile creature that just wheel away, which definitely learned earlier. In 2 becomes a cast from exile tutor, and is probably more useful than one of your 3 extract effects in that regard.
You can even entomb while Leyland of the Void is resting.
Wait, really?
You entomb this guy, right? And then the card goes to a graveyard. It goes to exile. And you don't care.
That's true. That is quite good, yeah.
Sheesh.
What else? I think those are the 2 main points. And like Tainted Pact and Consultation, like, just get that one.
Yeah, this guide was made to be
quite...
Because sometimes the Eldrazi guy was kind of clunky because he ended up in your graveyard or something like that. So what do you do? But this guy just...
And that's really quite good.
My girlfriend might exchange the Eldrazi guy for...
So, that would be one option. However, I've heard Shaper say that you probably want all 3 because it boosts your Tainted Pact and Consultation by, like, some double percentage number.
Oh, she doesn't have Tainted. She doesn't feel those cards. She doesn't like him.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot that we were talking about...
It's okay, but this is just a general advice for CDH. Keep all 3, because redundancy is a thing.
Yeah.
Especially in singleton form.
Yeah, it's huge. Like, we would not be in a good spot without redundant and tutor.
So what's next in the docket?
There's one more combo piece that is worth mentioning, and that's Muldrotha, the Gravetide.
Everybody has been so hyped about this card. Even normal EDH, CEDH, everybody wants to play with this.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be good enough at Commander EDH, because where you really want this card in your graveyard and to reanimate.
Yep.
But I've been thinking about it for Breakfast Top.
Oh.
Instead of Angels of Glory's Rise, you can reanimate Muldrotha.
I've seen discussions about the pros and cons and everything.
Yeah, I'm still undecided. I do like that it's a better card than Angel of Glory's Rise. The downside is that your Hermit Druid line does not win through Rule of Law anymore, but Hermit Druid has really second in the deck.
Mm-hmm.
The other differences are, like, I like Muldrotha because she also does...
Oh, yeah.
but she does Bomberman stuff that does get shut off by Curse Totem, and that's quite something.
Oh yeah, Curse Totem is a nice card.
It's really good.
I love playing it. When, just like last week, my girlfriend plays couple of doors on turn 1 and 2, and then just play Curse Totem. She looks at me with hate in her eyes.
It's a tough draw deck by it, that's yeah. For sure.
Turns out when you're playing a green deck and that happens to you, you're not going to be doing that game.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, the other person on the table was playing Kikijiki, so, Kikijiki combo in her deck, so, you know.
That's an easy double whammy.
Yeah, so, Muldrota, anything else besides that?
Yeah, there's one legendary creature that could make for a viable...
Please tell me Joyra. Please tell me Joyra.
Yes.
Oh,
exactly,
yes.
Yeah.
I freaking love her. I said this on podcast like a couple of episodes ago. I would like to see her with Paradoxical Engine.
Yeah,
definitely. Just like you do in Vintage.
There is like a SRAM type Cheerios.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, best would be a like sort of Blue Moon style build with a bunch of stacks pieces where you use Joyra as draw in.
Yeah, you can get under your stacks pieces quite easily when you draw a bunch of cards.
Like, I think she could basically replace Karano.
Oh, yeah. He's a thing.
And you, like, you change the deck a bit, and yeah, that's it.
Yeah, but
like,
basically your Solring draws a card, your Curse Totem draws a card, and on and on and on.
And, I mean, she serves as a win condition if you have any artifact, Paradox, and an Isochron Scepter with a bounce spell on it. So, I think she's quite good, yeah.
Hmm.
I like her. Definitely CEDH-able, I'd say.
The mana cost is nice, power and toughness is here.
All around, just a packet.
Anything else, Dominaria, speak to your interest?
Not really, no. I think that's all the cards. But considering that this is one set and we are talking age, that was of cards.
Power level of this set is just surprising. Like, they really wanted people to like this.
Mm-hmm.
And all the little nods to previous sets was wonderful. Like, the best is the Pardic Wanderer. Did you see that one? It's a 5-5 Trampler for 6. That doesn't matter. But the flavor text is, to the head of the archaeological findings. The excavation schedule at the dig site 93 beta must be revised. Part of the site has walked off. So the text is funny on its own. But wanna see even better thing? A dig site is 93 beta. It must be revised. Just
wow.
Every card here is... I'm just watching it and being like, I get this.
Yeah, I'm really put this much effort into the set. It's
they had to, because this is Dominaria.
Yeah.
If they screwed this set up...
But I'm very gonna be an all-around success for, like, pretty much everyone's Magic.
Yeah, girlfriend and I are going to the Two-Headed Giant pre-release at Sunday. We're really hyped for it.
I'm gonna try to go on Saturday, but I'm not sure.
I'll open cards and I'll just be happy to open them. Just be like, oh my god, look at this. My girlfriend won't actually, you know, care for all the references, because she started playing, like, 2-3 years ago? When I hooked her up to the game. Yeah, but I've been playing this for a long time, and I'll just gush on every small reference, because I am old, like my girlfriend said. But so it's... is Dominaria, and I love the set, and I love the whole plain Dominaria, and I've been missing it for a good while. And we've been off it for, what, 10 years? 11?
I honestly remember when the last set on Dominaria was,
Future Sight, 2007.
Oh yeah, Future Sight was actually set on Dominaria. Future Sight is favorite set of all time. The Time Spiral is my favorite block of...
I can see why, but technically we have been on Dominaria because of core sets, and there have been a couple of cards from, you know, Dominaria, but I don't count that.
Yeah. Oh, such a good block.
Oh yeah, to us, people who actually, you know, been longer with the game, it was a great set.
Yeah.
But to the new people just entering the game, they were like, "What? Why is this a thing? Why is this Archangel? Why is this Angel a guy?" And things like that.
I just want the Time Spiral 2.
They're never gonna give it. This is the closest you're gonna get it, Dominaria.
Probably. And I am cool with it.
Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of cards that I'm happy to play with, like the Shalai Voice of Plenty, the Hexproof chick. She's nice.
Oh, yeah.
The Almost Sun Titan guy is fun. The Bird Cleric. Mm-hmm. Teshar, yeah, that's the name. I'm liking so much of this.
Yeah, and like even for other four, we talked about Damping Sphere earlier. While it's, I'm not sure it's going to be in CDH, I love Damping for Modern.
For Vintage, maybe even.
Yeah, maybe. Like, it seems like a decent shops card.
In shops, you don't care that much.
Okay.
You, like, play your Argon Ravager, and then you play this, and you're fine.
Oh, you mean like you don't care about the card affecting you?
Yeah, you're not affected by it as much. Yeah. Even though shops these days are becoming more like Affinity in Modern, but that remains to be seen.
I'm Lantern.
Of course, definitely in the side. Of course, you're playing Lantern.
Yes, it's a really fun deck.
To at least one person at a table. Actually, to exactly one person at a table.
That's probably true. But I do love how you play two decks when you're on Lantern.
Yeah, it seems to be a mentally taxing.
Mm-hmm. And I like them. Like, I had a game a while ago when we were testing. He was on Grixis Death Shadow. Mm-hmm. I was on Lantern. And the set of games we played was the best ever.
Wow.
Just the ultimate factor. That matchup is so good.
It basically comes down to you having bridges and them not being removed, or...?
It's really, like, it's sort of like this intricate dance, because they have a lot of cantrips, Street Wraiths and stuff, and you're trying to control the top of their deck so they don't get the Call Against commands and Snapcast or whatever else might be a problem. So you always have to, like, try to find the right balance, and as the Lantern player, you're a bit behind because their average draws are than yours.
Mm-hmm. I'm sad that Nick Shea isn't here, the co-host, because he's an avid Tron player. So he would have things to say about Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't just sad he isn't here in the general.
Yeah, he'll be back one day.
Oh, like a week. he has some gaming convention thing. His company is presenting. Yeah, but cool anywho, stuff. Yeah. This is a really strong block. Just plus the Brawl is becoming it.
Oh yeah, bro.
I'm not sure if I'm going to be playing any of that, but...
I think it's really good that Brawl exists.
Oh, I don't definitely, have... definitely.
Like, I probably won't have much personal investment in Brawl, because I'm sort of a standard player, and it seems like the perfect kind of for people to, I don't know, go to FNM, do two or three drafts, then pick up the cards they drafted, and make them into a Brawl deck, and they're probably going to do quite fine.
You know what I see Brawl being great for? You know when you have EDH tournaments and then you can't actually get along with the power level that's going to be played at? Brawl solves it perfect. We have these 2-3 sets that you're going to be playing with, and that's it. So we'll have an EDH tournament, it's going to be Brawl, and there we go. And you know what cards to expect, and you know how to metagame. Because when I'm playing, let's say, Alesha or Bloodpod, it's a bit more difficult for me to go to a local tournament and actually metagame properly. Because I don't know what to do. Because my local metagame is much more spell-based, so I hate on things like that, and then somebody comes up with a, let's say, dinosaur deck, and they can just crush me.
Yep.
Because they're like, oh, non-creature spells cost one more to cast. Well, here's the dinosaur.
Gishoth. No, wait, he's
8. 8. Basically, I'm like stopping 2 people at a table, but then the 4th person just smashes me.
Yep, but for Brawl, the life of stacks.
Yeah, but for Brawl, you don't have to worry because A, you know the metagame, and B, you won't be playing any taxings anyway. Because Wizards doesn't like that much.
Yep, you get like, and I think that's it.
You also get Fall the Tron. For 6 mana, you kill all the lands. That's a thing?
Oh, yeah.
It's a bad Armageddon, but it's still an Armageddon. It's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, it's cool that they printed. I'm
surprised they printed actually Armageddon in Standard.
Yeah, like the last white color mass land destruction we got was Ravages of War?
Yeah, which is basically Armageddon.
Yeah. It's been.
Shifted to red. Shifted to red and green, which is funny enough.
Oh, yeah.
They were Vitriol and things like that.
Yep. And Ruination is in red.
Oh, yeah. Ruination is a fun card.
I do like it a fair bit. I think it's a design, so to how Price of Wood design.
I'm sadly not playing any Ruinations. Maybe I should fix that.
Hard to say.
The problem is my meta is, let's say my girlfriend plays her dinosaurs, which is mostly basic lands. And then there is the local Kefnet player. He was supposed to be on this podcast, but he couldn't make it. Which is mono blue. So Ruination not actually hitting him this hard.
True. Choco.
I should be choke or something like that. Or just boil. That's fun. I kill all the islands. Which one?
During the last session I played with my IRL playgroup, we had another funny scene where I think it was in the same game, where one guy said, watch out, he's gonna go off next turn, please find your choke. And then the other guy cracked a fetch and let the guy said the thing about shuffle. He also had an Oracle of Moldiah out to flip the top card, and he actually ended up with the choke.
Wow. How sad were you?
Not sad at all. I had a counterspell.
Oh, of course you did. Gee, a blue player had a counterspell. Surprise.
It was a fun move.
How many decks would you say that are viable in the CDH? Just like a rough number.
Definitely more.
Usually the perspective of a casual player is that CDH is just like four decks and they're all combo decks and that's it.
Yeah, that's there is a lot to play in CEDH that would be considered viable and good.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to include just decks that can a game, then the number goes up way, way more. But if we're actually talking about like decent, viable decks, then I'd say around.
That's a good number, right?
Yeah, there's a lot.
And you don't just have to be a combo deck. Sadly, you will never find aggro in that, but you know.
Like, the closest you get to a swarm aggro type deck is Edric, but it's sort of weird because Edric wins by non-deterministically chaining extra turn spells together.
Edric is weird. Andro actually plays it a lot. He like, because he's like, look guys, I'm playing a fair deck. It's a creature deck, come on. And we just see right through him. Because whenever he's offering you gifts, you're like,
Not like...
What's the catch?
Just go turn one Entomb Elish Norn, turn two Reanimate.
Actually happened Sunday. People were really sick about it. Especially Griffin, because she played a couple of Mana Dogs. She's like, guess what? Plus, the second chick on the table, she had her Kiki Jiki combo in her hand. And she was like, I don't think this is gonna work.
The one time where...
surprisingly good.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And you often get games like that, which is just silly. But then again, we have a lot of games that start with everybody draw their hand. Yes, I'll put this Leyline of the Void. And I'm like, that shuts...
Oh, God.
A Leyline shuts like 90% of my decks.
Leyline is tough. Like, also of the lab mate that don't know, somehow manages to get turn one of the Void so often. It's actually...
Just like the other guy at our table.
He just magically finds...
And I'm just like, this hand I kept. Luckily, because I'm playing Bloodpod or Alesha, I often have just the beatdown plan. And you can guess where the beatdown is going to.
Definitely, player.
Honestly, if I just murdered the living hell out of him, I'll...
Yeah, it does often. Like, I've had people try to smash my face into Ferry just to have a cursed token.
Yeah, yeah.
There are, however, I think I should mention this, situations where doing that is not necessarily the right thing to do.
Yeah, you need to see how much the thing is screwing you versus how much it is screwing other people.
That on one hand, and on the other, there's also keep in mind like players running Ad Nauseam.
Oh yeah, life totals matter, and Necropos as well.
Yeah, so the question of who to attack surprisingly nuanced in EDH.
Yeah, whenever questions like that happen, people actually just ask, okay, just objectively, who would you attack? And then even if we're the people who were supposed to be attacked, we give arguments, okay, you should attack me because this, this, and this. Because we like approaching it that way.
Makes sense. Yeah, I also try to do people.
I mean, sometimes I'll give proper arguments, but I can also give proper arguments why to attack the other guy.
Yeah. I'd probably say, okay, so I've got this cursed totem here. That's obviously annoying for you. However, look at this guy who drew five cards. There's a good chance he's going to be able to do Ad Nauseam stuff. So.
Usually people who drew a bunch of cards in one turn, they're more likely to win than the other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a question
little
of...
Little they know.
A question of threat assessment is always... it's always a tricky one. But I love when people attack a person who has big scary stuff versus the guy who's been drawing like six cards a turn each turn. That oh, come on, guys. Happen. I'm not drawing any lands. Which is true, they're not drawing any lands, but you know, everything else in their hand.
Usually gas.
Yep.
Like, if they say I have any lands, then you can be sure that they're holding, like, a bunch of...
Even if, you know, you're not playing CEDH, it's suspicious.
Yeah.
There's been games that I've just been sitting quietly with my Drowned deck, having zero creatures, I was just drawing cards quietly, and then Doomsday happened.
Yep. Or, like, one thing that Shaper, Food Chain Tazri, likes to is he'll just like complain about how bad his hand is, and then
oh my God.
Before the turn gets back to him, it's a monocon.
Well, I think the turn just got much better.
Yep.
I mean, usually when I play the Drano, I do have shitty draws, but I'm drawing like a couple of cards a turn each turn. I'll get there sooner or later. One thing we wanted to talk about, I forgot. Monday is going to be the band update for Commander. Any wishes you have and expectations?
My wish is that they don't ban any that's currently.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I don't think anything's a ban. I've seen people in the competitive talk about banning Flash. I don't. I can kind of see for banning Carpet of Flowers.
Oh, don't ban Carpet of Flowers. So good.
However, I don't think they need to be banned. Mystic Remora may be a bit more so Carpet of Flowers, because it's probably the single card that really warps the game every time anyone plays it. But I don't know, it's weird. I would not ban any EDH right now.
What would you unban, generally?
There's a lot of on the current ban list I think could be unbanned. Strictly in the context of competitive EDH, there's a lot of stuff on there that makes casual particularly nice, which I completely understand. However, some cards that we might like if EDH would be Recurring Nightmare as like a decent graveyard value in.
Mm-hmm.
Gifts Ungiven. I want
Gifts. I would want that.
We have Arayo should probably stay banned.
But what about Braids?
Braids can probably...
Yes! There we go. I freaking want Braids in my Lash. Because, yeah, honestly, Braids was stupidly overpowered when Paris Mulligan was. However, it's been away for a good while, for 2 years. And even if you have Braids as your commander for normal EDH, let's speak, you will most likely not get those turn 1 or turn 2.
Yeah, and I mean, then, if you have her as your commander, then you're playing Mono Black.
Yeah, and Mono Black can do much more better things.
What else? Oh yeah, I think Leovold would be an interesting competitive unban.
Ooh, that would be fun.
Like, I do feel that having the meta sort of deal with the Thrasios in the decks a bit would be decent. What else is right now?
Biorhythm. You don't want to unban that. It's a bit too specifically.
I don't know. I totally understand like Biorhythm, Sway of the Stars, and those kind of bans for casual. I don't think they'd come up.
You know how I see it for more casual games. If it's that much mana and it costs, maybe it should end.
See, I'm inclined to agree personally, but I can see how committee's feeling about what games should look like kind of clashes with that, because they. Like, what one thing they really push one button to end the game with effects.
And yet, Hulk got unbanned.
Yeah, but Hulk is okay because you can also not...
Oh, sure. If you have Protean Hulk in your deck, I'm really inclined to believe you're not doing anything banned. You just want to get, like, a couple mana down.
I mean, if you thought all I'm doing is getting, like, two mana creatures and 2 1 mana creatures...
I mean, that is correct, but there's a bit more nuance to that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that we should ban Hulk. I'm just saying if Hulk is okay, maybe some other things should get out of the
way. I completely agree.
And if I'm unbanning things for casual EDH, I would first start not even with Braids. Coalition Victory would be the first thing to go away. Yes, it can win the game for like 8 mana, but guess what? Just Land Destruction, stop it. Removal creature can stop it.
Yeah.
And that will force people to play actually more interactive.
Which, in my opinion...
Yes. And it will teach people that lands aren't actually holy cow. They're not actually sacred or to be protected, you know, and not that.
Yeah. One of the things that I think great about EDH and that casual players as well should have more advantage of is diversifying your mana source.
Yep. It is nice to ramp, like, to 10 lands on turn 5, but those lands could just go away.
Yeah. Imagine if instead of Cultivate spent 3 mana on, like, a Mana Dog, a Sol Ring, and an Utopia Sprawl or something.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got some mana from 3 different permanent types, and if somebody wipes the board, you've still got your land. If somebody kills your land, you've still got your Dog and your Sol Ring, and also, if somebody drops a Null Rod...
What do you mean, if somebody rats? You're putting it like it's not gonna happen. I've had too many games where people just rat and ratted.
I mean, going hard on Wrath of God seems like a great strategy.
It is, but you shouldn't just rely on that, because I've seen people who have, like, maybe 2-3 single target removal spells, and that's it, the rest is rats.
True.
And then I play a combo piece, and another combo piece, and they're just like, I'm not gonna rat now, because I'm gonna lose a bunch of things, and I just want to have, you know, a bunch of value.
Mm-hmm.
And then you lose the game.
Okay, that seems not... I think if somebody played like a Wrath of Tribal deck in a casual playgroup that I was a part of, I a deck that just gets a lot of value from things that are not creatures, like maybe, I don't know, Doretti, Artifil or something.
Oh, he would love that. Oh, feel free to kill all the creatures, why not?
Yeah.
I'll be like,
you just, yeah, you just profits doing all work, baby.
Honestly, I play things like Alesha and just don't mind the rat. You
yeah,
kill
that
the board,
can also work.
That's alright, we'll recover in like 2 turns. But what I started doing is more and more just remove a bunch of rat effects, just put more single target. And I just love the flexibility I have, because instant speed is so much better than sorceries.
Oh, it's not even close.
But that doesn't mean I'm supporting people who put Vedalken Orrery in all their decks.
I'm not sure why that's a thing, to be honest.
Because Command Zone, mostly? Because,
oh,
that's the second coming of Jesus Christ today. They put it in all of their decks because, you know, it makes everything in your deck better. But it would already be better if you just put more interaction, in my mind.
I can kind of see it making sense as a reaction to what other people are doing. Like, there's a lot of Wrath of Gods, Vedalken Orrery, can wait until someone wraths and then cast your creatures afterwards. But...
but you can also make your deck just inherently more resilient to rats.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Like,
if I'm gonna put an artifact that's 4+ mana that doesn't do anything when it comes into play, I'll put a Paradox in.
That does sound a lot better, yeah.
Because that doesn't just win me the game; it also provides me with much more value.
I think the issue I have is that it doesn't provide you with any additional resources in any way. You don't get cards. You don't get additional mana. And it's not really a combo piece either.
Yeah, so I've been having a bit of a crusade against that card.
I have to think about it some more, but just like intuitively, I'm not big on.
Is there any other card that you see that casual people playing that you have just inherent cringe against or something?
Not really cringe, but if you can, please try to avoid playing tapped. Your deck will run so much, just make your land drop every turn and actually use the land.
You know what I love doing? People playing Karu lands from Ravnica and just playing Strip Mine again.
Oh, that's a...
Thank you, sir. Thank you for doing it. My playgroup has tapped action mostly. Maybe it's in one or two more decks, but mostly it's gone. I think I'm to blame because I like to play Armageddon Effect.
That's actually, like, if we want to go on a bit of a tangent, if you have a group that, like, tolerates these type of annoying effects, so to say, then one way to, like, make them better include specific types of cards in your deck to, like, teach them, okay, this is a thing, this is something you might have to watch out for. Consider this when you're building your deck, like Armageddon, so people don't invest, like, have too much of an investment in Karu lands, Bounce, whatever else.
I mean, I started running Armageddon and things, and I asked my players if they're okay with it, they were like, play whatever, but as soon as I did that, Remnant Excavators and things like that started showing up.
And that's good.
Yeah, I'm happy for that.
It's always nice when people follow along and they actively find ways to deal with it.
Yeah, that's one way that the group should evolve. Like, people started playing things that have great ETBs. I started putting in Hushroom Griffin, things like that, in the deck.
That's good, yeah. That's a thing which you can keep evolving your playgroup without really increasing the overall power level as well. So if you don't want to do Arms of Sword, you can start putting effects into your deck and make your playgroup react to it. Because, like, some things are better than others, and you can make use of that fact by switching up what you do and making others react and keeping the game fresh and even on a level that's not particularly
One of the best add-ons that my girlfriend did, she plays dinosaurs. But she put Stranglehold into that deck. She doesn't have that much searching of the deck, but she doesn't care because it's the only opponents. She plays it, and we just look at the card and we're like, I had two cats. And the one blue player looks at it and he's like, I had tutors and extras.
Stranglehold hurts.
And her deck doesn't care. Even if it just said nobody can search libraries, she'd be like, I'm playing dinosaurs.
Yeah, it's...
it's backbreaking.
Yeah, like... especially in competitive EDH, where you kind of try to reasonably maximum you can put into your deck to be able to like find the stuff you need, and you're often going to have use tutors to find interaction for the pieces that are giving you trouble, like a Chain of Vapor or a Nature's Claim or something, and with Stranglehold, you just can't do that anymore.
See, that's why I play Leonin Arbiter, things like that in my decks. Sure, you can search, it's just going to cost you a lot. And when you combine that with Talia and things like that, and when they finally pay, you just cast Aemon Mindsense.
Yeah, I think Leon and Arbiter, that might be a bit underrated as a hate against the partner decks, because those are usually four color and they run 10 fetch on top of like all the tutor stuff.
Yeah, because they kind of have.
Yep.
Plus, I love just playing that stupid cat that's lying on the throne and being like, sure, you can pay. Sadly, I don't have enough blinking effects that I can just, you know, they pay, I blink him and things like that and just pay again.
Oh, that's such a cool death and taxes.
Yep, I just love seeing that. Oh.
Yeah, sure, I'm going to pay to fetch. Okay, restoration. Well,
we'll pay again? Also, it's fun with people that actually don't know that that's a thing, because you do have to pay for second.
It's magic rules are that sometimes. It's not very intuitive, but it makes sense, like, kind of have a slightly better...
Yeah, luckily for me, the second co-host, Niksha, he's actually a level 1 judge. So whenever a new set comes out, he just goes through all the rules, interactions.
Yeah, I also tend to do that for the cards that are relevant to me. Because it's always good when you don't take a 5-minute break to look up some card rules.
A problem is, I play a lot of cards that are in Japanese language.
So do I.
So I have to explain to people, and then I have to actually show them the Oracle text. Guys, I'm not BSing you. Master of Cruelties can actually attack with Alesha. It's actually fine. I had a thing come up many times.
We had, was that, I think, in our first season, episode 2, I was on Doomsdayzer. And it was kind of a good game. There was a grafting in play on Cameron's side of the board. And I did a fairly Doomsday build that involves Yawgwill for the win. However, the Graftiger's Cage, we completely forgot about the part where you can't cast spells from your graveyard.
Ouch.
Yeah, people were rather quick to point that out in the YouTube comments.
Really? People in YouTube comments are ready to react? I'm surprised.
It kind of helps, like, build ourselves from the competitive community, because those people are, like, the bedrock fan base, and they always happy to comment on it. We do... either poorly or well.
Yeah, you need to get feedback. Even if it's just, Definitely. Wow, you guys screwed this up so much.
Yeah, it's honestly a big what has helped us improve both as content creators and as players. The constant and regular feedback we get from our community.
I can't remember when it was the first time I actually saw one of you, but it was a while. Plus, what's good about your content is actually really quick to digest.
That's good.
It's not like Star City Games games, even though I love watching those guys, but you need to separate a bunch of time for the gameplay. You guys, I can just watch it before I go to work. And then...
Yeah, we try to keep stuff as possible. Cameron cuts a lot of like shuffling and
banter.
Dead thinking time. Some banter does get lost. We do try to preserve. There's not too much banter going on during the game, so most of the time all of us are like really focused on trying to win. But sometimes, especially during longer, you do get the wins.
I don't know if there was anything else I wanted to ask, but you are going to have some content real soon.
Very soon. I actually have a QA watch right before we started. So it's finished uploading. It's probably going to go live tonight or tomorrow,
I'd imagine.
It is a set review for Dominaria, so kind of similar to what we did earlier.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
With some more fluff and stuff, and some faces to look at.
Yeah, is there anything else we need to discuss?
Oh, good question. We've been talking for a long time. This has been surprisingly...
We usually keep it like hour and a half.
That's a good, I think.
I hope so, because we've been doing this for 2 years already? Yeah, 2 years.
Nice, yeah. It's always important that you do.
I mean, we try to just be ourselves and not emulate anybody else. Which is funny because I started to cutting a lot of Magic podcasts from my listening queue. Because I just don't want to copy anybody. I'm paranoid like that.
That's a reason, because even if you don't try to copy any, like conscious subconscious, gonna drift into a direction that's similar, look up to doing.
Yeah, if I ever start summoning like people from, I don't know, Command Cast or Command Zone, please tell me that and then shoot me.
Well, many players ask. I don't actually have a question, supposed to be a joke.
I mean, it's important to have your own identity, I think.
Yeah, that's really important.
Yeah, you guys are doing your own thing. Let's say Magic Aids is doing his own thing, and etc.
Yeah, it's it's really about not just each type of content you create or like what you talk about, but also in who you are or present mm-hmm. yourself as. Because while people might like enjoy or not enjoy the content, they often tend to stick around for the people.
I mean, our podcast, it's generally a Commander podcast, but then we talk a bunch about, let's say, Commander, modern or vintage, or something like that. Because those are the things we like.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do. If the conversation takes its natural course, it's better.
Oh, trust me, Nixia is going to shoehorn Tron into any conversation he can, so... he's the type of person who plays, he basically plays every color of Tron ever.
Oh god, that's so...
Trust me, he's making up new ones as he goes.
Like, is there a color of doesn't exist?
Even if there wasn't, he already played it. He goes through each set and he's like, what kind of color of Tron could I do? And he sees something that's like 6, 7, 8 mana and let's say one color of mana. I could play that. He plays the Garruk, the black green one, the flip one, in his Tron deck. Nobody does basic. Nobody does it except him, but he killed many of stupid Noble Hierarchs.
Just him.
He played against Infect, which was his nightmare matchup, and then stupid Garruk came into play. I was watching at the side, I was shocked. What the hell is happening? He's an innovator.
Yeah, you gotta like respect and give props to all that go off the...
Yeah, he can never play just... this is a stock list, I'm gonna play that. He can never do that.
It's... I mean, considering that to a lot of people, magic is a type of self-express, does make mm-hmm. a lot of sense.
I mean, that's how I usually approach building. For Commander, I take Commander, what do I want to do with this? And just do that. I rarely look at any other list. For Bloodpod, I took the stock Bloodpod list. Okay, I don't have this, but I can put this in its slot. I want to play with this, and etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's... When I brew decks, what do... I usually have a very concrete idea where I want the deck to be positioned, and I only really brew CEDH decks, so it's mostly a question of like how interactive mm-hmm. do I want this list to be. Then I choose my spot somewhere along that line, and I put in the cards that I want. Like, there's a list I've been brewing together with another member of the CEH community called Two Hand Touch. He's the one who made our Rurik Thar list.
Oh, I love that.
And we've been working on a Thrasios Smasher control build mm-hmm. that uses Divergent Transformation as its win condition.
What do you transform into?
Runescarred Demon and Razaketh. Wow. To basically get two tutors to assemble Isochron Scepter Dramatic Reversal.
That's a really roundabout way to...
It kind of is, but it gives you another one card win condition.
Yeah.
And another cool part about it is that we run, for instance, artifact units that are winning line. Runescarred Demon and Razaketh beats Cursed Totem, which is otherwise a problem for Scepter decks. Because we can get artifact mutation off Runescarred Demon, then use that to blow up a Cursed Totem, get two tokens, assemble Isochron Scepter.
Holy m***.
It's a lot of fun so far. I'm really enjoying this.
It sounds like a thing that shouldn't be, but it is.
Yeah, exactly. It feels great. The deck's also running like Dig Through Time and all of the... You're probably going to get to see it in Season 3.
Oh, good. So, once a week you're going to have content, or...?
I think we're going to do content once a week, yeah. We'll have to see how often we play.
Yep,
probably yep. still around once a month, once every 3 weeks or so.
Because you have time zones and everything.
Time zones to consider, and the amount of editing that goes into it is just way more.
And you do want to keep it short-ish.
Yeah. Like, in order to get the videos as concise as they are, with all the cards in hand information, etc., I think it's audio combined, a little over 30 hours.
Sheesh, just the rendering must be.
Yeah, that long time.
Yeah, when you make a really short, just one picture video and it takes 2 hours to render it, you want to kill yourself.
He does a lot of work and I appreciate it.
Yeah, I admire people who actually have the patience. I barely have patience to actually edit an episode and it takes me like 15 minutes.
I know that feel like audio editing.
Audio is easy, but it's... Honestly, I've been doing it for so long, I can just do it in like 10 minutes.
That's good. I usually spend like 6 to 8 on a gameplay episode and up to 10 hours a podcast episode.
Yeah. I've made the good settings, and I just know what things I will need to do in Audacity, and that's it.
Oh, yeah, that.
Plus, Audacity is such a simple, nice program that I love it.
Audacity is fantastic for a free web profile.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's not actually something that you need to pay for.
Yep. Thank you, OpenStack.
Yeah, the quality you get from the program like this.
One thing I've always been amazed by when it comes to Audacity, how good the noise filter.
Oh god, that's the best button ever.
Like, it's actually better than these filtering plugins that you need to pay for. Mm-hmm.
Whenever I podcast with Nixia, there is a certain boop-boop-boop-boop sound in his background. And just two clicks and it's gone.
Nice.
Because noise reduction is the best button. That and truncate silence.
Yeah. What a Audacity for existing.
Mm-hmm. Making podcasters' lives much more easy.
Yep.
But I think we've been rambling for long enough. Should we call it an episode?
That sounds like, I think we've gone over plenty of things.
Yeah, thanks again for coming on. It's been a real pleasure having you. And I hope people are a bit more closer to the topic of CDH now.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Glad to have had the opportunity to talk about EDH for a bit. And I hope that the listeners of this podcast be more interested in competitive EDH.
Even if they don't go full CDH, just improving their decks a bit is good.
Yeah, there's always some.
At least lower your mana curve. That's always a good advice.
Doing more equals more fun, trust me.
Well, this has been Siggy from the Lab Maniacs and Avinigar, and this has been episode 69, yeah? And you can find all that information in the show notes. I'm going to soon have another article on Cardsphere blog. It's going to be about taxes, surprise, surprise. And as always, the Emperor protects. Have a nice evening, guys.
Goodbye.